Chapter 33. Nights are very dark. The lookout stationed in the head of the boat knows by the ripple of the water if any great impediment be near at hand, and rings a bell beside him, which is the signal for the engine to be stopped. But always in the night this bell has work to do, and after every ring, there comes a blow which renders it no easy matter to remain in bed. The decline of day here was very gorgeous, tinging the firmament deeply with red and gold, up to the very keystone of the arch above us. As the sun went down behind the bank, the slightest blades of grass upon it seemed to become as distinctly visible as the arteries in the skeleton of a leaf. And when, as it slowly sank, the red and golden bars upon the water grew dimmer, and dimmer yet, as if they were sinking too, and all the glowing colors of departing day paled, inch by inch, before the somber night, the scene became a thousand times more lonesome, and more dreary than before, and all its influences darkened with the sky. We drank the muddy water of this river, while we were upon it. It is considered wholesome by the natives, and is something more opaque than gruel. I have seen water like it at the filter shops, but nowhere else. On the fourth night, after leaving Louisville, we reached St. Louis, and here I witnessed the conclusion of an incident, trifling enough in itself, but very pleasant to see, which had interested me during the whole journey. There was a little woman on board, with a little baby. And both little woman and little child were cheerful, good-looking, bright-eyed, and fair to see. The little woman had been passing a long time with her sick mother in New York, and had left her home in St. Louis, in that condition in which ladies who truly love their lords desire to be. The baby was born in her mother's house, and she had not seen her husband, to whom she was now returning, for 12 months. Having left him a month or two after their marriage. Well, to be sure, there never was a little woman so full of hope, and tenderness, and love, and anxiety, as this little woman was. And all day long she wondered whether he would be at the wharf, and whether he had got her letter, and whether, if she sent the baby ashore by somebody else, he would know it, meeting it in the street. Which, seeing that he had never set eyes upon it in his life, was not very likely in the abstract, but was probable enough, to the young mother. She was such an artless little creature, and was in such a sunny, beaming, hopeful state, and let out all this matter clinging close about her heart, so freely, that all the other lady passengers entered into the spirit of it as much as she. And the captain, who heard all about it from his wife, was wondrous sly, I promise you. Inquiring, every time we met at table, as in forgetfulness, whether she expected anybody to meet her at St. Louis, and whether she would want to go ashore the night we reached it, but he supposed she wouldn't, and cutting many other dry jokes of that nature. There was one little weazen, dried apple-faced old woman, who took occasion to doubt the constancy of husbands in such circumstances of bereavement. And there was another lady with a lapdog, old enough to moralize on the lightness of human affections, and yet not so old that she could help nursing the baby, now and then, or laughing with the rest, when the little woman called it by its father's name, and asked it all manner of fantastic questions concerning him in the joy of her heart. It was something of a blow to the little woman, that when we were within 20 miles of our destination, it became clearly necessary to put this baby to bed. But she got over it with the same good humor, tied a handkerchief round her head, and came out into the little gallery with the rest. Then, such an oracle as she became in reference to the localities, and such facetiousness as was displayed by the married ladies, and such sympathy as was shown by the single ones, and such peals of laughter as the little woman herself, who would just as soon have cried, greeted every jest with. At last, there were the lights of St. Louis, and here was the wharf, and those were the steps. And the little woman covering her face with her hands, and laughing or seeming to laugh more than ever, ran into her own cabin, and shut herself up. I have no doubt that in the charming inconsistency of such excitement, she stopped her ears, lest she should hear him asking for her. But I did not see her do it. Then, a great crowd of people rushed on board, though the boat was not yet made fast, but was wandering about among the other boats to find a landing place. And everybody looked for the husband, and nobody saw him. When, in the midst of us all, heaven knows how she ever got there, there was a little woman clinging with both arms tight round the neck of a fine, good-looking, sturdy young fellow. And in a moment afterwards, there she was again, actually clapping her little hands for joy, as she dragged him through the small door of her small cabin, to look at the baby as he lay asleep. We went to a large hotel, called the Planter's House. Built like an English hospital, with long passages and bare walls, and skylights above the room doors for the free circulation of air. There were a great many boarders in it, and as many lights sparkled and glistened from the windows down into the street below, when we drove up, as if it had been illuminated on some occasion of rejoicing. It is an excellent house, and the proprietors have most bountiful notions of providing the creature comforts. Dining alone with my wife in our own room, one day, I counted 14 dishes on the table at once. In the old French portion of the town, the thoroughfares are narrow and crooked, and some of the houses are very quaint and picturesque. Being built of wood, with tumble-down galleries before the windows, approachable by stairs or rather ladders from the street, there are queer little barbers' shops and drinking houses too, in this quarter. And abundance of crazy old tenements with blinking casements, such as may be seen in Flanders. Some of these ancient habitations, with high garret gable windows perking into the roofs, have a kind of French shrug about them, and being lopsided with age, appear to hold their heads askew, besides, as if they were grimacing in astonishment at the American improvements. It is hardly necessary to say that these consist of wharfs and warehouses, and new buildings in all directions, and of a great many vast plans which are still progressing. Apostrophe already, however, some very good houses, broad streets, and marble-fronted shops, have gone so far ahead as to be in a state of completion, and the town bids fair in a few years to improve considerably. Though it is not likely ever to vie, in point of elegance or beauty, with Cincinnati. The Roman Catholic religion, introduced here by the early French settlers, prevails extensively. Among the public institutions are a Jesuit college, a convent for the ladies of the Sacred Heart, apostrophe and a large chapel attached to the college, which was in course of erection at the time of my visit, and was intended to be consecrated on the 2nd of December in the next year. The architect of this building is one of the reverend fathers of the school, and the works proceed under his sole direction. The organ will be sent from Belgium. In addition to these establishments, there is a Roman Catholic cathedral, dedicated to St. Francis Xavier, and a hospital, founded by the munificence of a deceased resident, who was a member of that church. It also sends missionaries from hence among the Indian tribes. The Unitarian Church is represented, in this remote place, as in most other parts of America, by a gentleman of great worth and excellence. The poor have good reason to remember and bless it, for it befriends them and aids the cause of rational education without any sectarian or selfish views. It is liberal in all its actions, of kind construction, and of wide benevolence. There are three free schools already erected and in full operation in this city. A fourth is building and will soon be opened. No man ever admits the unhealthiness of the place he dwells in unless he is going away from it, and I shall therefore, I have no doubt, be at issue with the inhabitants of St. Louis in questioning the perfect salubrity of its climate, and in hinting that I think it must rather dispose to fever in the summer and autumnal seasons. Just adding that it is very hot, lies among great rivers, and has vast tracts of undrained swampy land around it, I leave the reader to form his own opinion. As I had a great desire to see a prairie before turning back from the furthest point of my wanderings, and as some gentlemen of the town had, in their hospitable consideration, an equal desire to gratify me, a day was fixed, before my departure, for an expedition to the Looking Glass Prairie, which is within 30 miles of the town. Deeming it possible that my readers may not object to know what kind of thing such a gypsy party may be at that distance from home, and among what sort of objects it moves, I will describe the jaunt in another chapter. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.